Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And this is episode 203 of this fine podcast. Today, on this episode, maybe some people break up the episodes into two because that's how they have to be able to deal with us. So, you know, on this episode, maybe you break it up into three and you listen to it over the course of a week, this week even. You know what? This is a flexible podcast listening experience. Three albums. Baby Keem's LP debut, The Melodic Blue, Star-Crossed by Casey Musgraves, quite an adventure, and Turnstile by Glow On, a different adventure. We also have some singles coming up here, and our namesake gets reckoned again. Maybe we should ring like a gong every time we do a Radiohead drop. But
so rare, and I'm excited that I have to have to listen to Radiohead this week.
Get it as much as we can. So let's jump in it, as we say. First off, as we start, as we always do, with new singles, we have Pressure by Ari Lennox. And this is a wonderful track. Relatively poppy, I would say, like pop-ish, like pop adjacent. Get it, don't be timid when you win it back. Love a bum, live alone, need it. So I don't want no drip, baby, spread like you need it. So I'm spicy, baby, jump up on this. That's why you like it, baby. Come and get this. Takes a lot to excite me, baby. Give it all you got. I'm a tough cookie, baby. Get the rice. But, you know, Ari Lennox is just really good vocalist. It has kind of like a slower, nice kind of almost steel drum electronic bassy thing in the background. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes it kind of weird sounding. But, you know, she has a wonderful voice and it's a fun kind of like thing. In the video, she's kind of doing like 50s, 60s kind of looks and things like that. So I dig it. It's a really nice track.
And then next one we have Mercy by Chloe.
Different direction. Yeah. This is Chloe of Chloe direction. And Bailey fame. Yes. And it's like Chloe and Hallie. I don't know why I did that. Hallie. And Have Mercy is a notably more like trap kind of thing. You start with Murder on the Beat, so those of you in the know will know that it's not nice.
You know, you hear Murder on the Beat and you're like, hey.
Yeah. Once again, Chloe has maybe not once again. This is kind of like a surprise to me because I haven't really seen Chloe in like a rapping thing, more of like a singing thing with Hallie. But like, she's rapping and she's rapping pretty well. Like, I would say better than a lot of like male SoundCloud artists that are out there.
Well, that's not very difficult to do, but yes.
Low bar, but we have to keep reminding folks out here. So that was a really good track. And I'm interested to see how, like, what we kind of get more of that, whether she's going to, like, blend in a little bit of singing, whether she's going to, like, blend in a little more, like, trapping.
Be interesting. And the track was short, too. It was only about 2 minutes long. But it was good. I mean, Murder to Beat made a great, produced it very well, too. So
she could be a one-woman Ray Schremer, potentially. If she plays
free,
that, right?
Is it gonna be Free Hallie then next or what?
No. They both have robust like solo careers, but I think they would both like continue doing career. But that would be really funny. Free Free Hallie. I do not want to be one of those media entities that even in a joke. I mean, like in a joking way, of course. But just so we're clear, we're not trying to perpetuate any sort of feud between the two. We love both of them as artists.
No.
Cool. The Ray Schremer thing is just hilarious.
Exactly.
And lastly, gong! We are at the Radiohead corner. Say the word by Radiohead. So, Sean, why do we have a new Radiohead song? And is this even a new Radiohead song?
Because the Lord graced us with the presence of a Radiohead and just dropped it down to us just from the heavens on earth. Now, and in seriousness, so they are... basically, upon the 20th anniversary-ish of Kid A / Amnesiac, which came out in 2000 and 2001, respectively, they're releasing a reissue of the album, but combining both of them to make them called Kid Amnesia, which is kind of play on words. And it's going to be all of a bunch of unreleased tracks that they never have actually done. And like even in like the Radiohead Public Library, I haven't been able to find or anything. So they're all pretty polished up tracks. Some might be similar to things that we've heard before, but never in a produced way. And they released a single this week teasing that. By the way, that's going to come out in November, I believe, around November 5th. Kid Amnesia is going to come out. About 10 tracks, I think, of it. There are actually
10 new tracks?
Yeah, I believe so. But there are some stuff that they have played live. Example, and there's going to be like different versions of stuff. So I'll go to the track listing real quick. Like Spinning Plates, which is a different version of it. Title track, Fog, again, version. If you know, you know that one. If you say the word, which is the track that came out here. Follow Me Around, which I have played a couple of times but never really made it production. Poke Pole, and a bunch of other things that they've that are going to be untitled versions of tracks. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But If You Say the Word is a complete track. It really fits in the style of both Kid A and Amnesiac, and it's a good track. It's just interesting that they never released it as a B-side for anything either, because it's a complete produced track. It's not experimental or anything like that at all. So sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I unfortunately did not know that aspect of my homework and have not even heard the song before we'd gone live. I will definitely be listening to it probably immediately once we're off.
I think I've listened to it 8,000 times at this point, but
naturally,
SiriusXMU also isn't helping me, because they'll play it like on the hour every hour, which doesn't help my my likeness anyways. So I'll keep listening to it. It's cool because you can hear that on Martino and other parts, and it sounds like the era of Radiohead it is. And it'd be interesting to see some of those unreleased tracks and other things, because they put like hashtags on their Instagram page of what some of the tracks will be. But we'll review it when it gets here, which is amazing, because I never thought I'd actually be able to review a Radiohead album on this podcast, because I thought Tom would say, fuck you, you can only review me.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a while before like we get new 2020 plus era Radiohead. And that might be the last one.
Yeah, you have the Smile Project, which is going to come, which supposedly they've recorded an album and that should be out sometime this year, allegedly. But that's going to come out before any proper Radiohead track does, because they all live all over the place. No.
Yeah, and especially like lockdowns haven't helped. But to satiate us, we have that Smile Project, which should be coming out later this year, early next year. We talked about that in an previous episode of Audio Face, and also like a different video you can see on our YouTube channel. Speaking of other Audio Face things relating to Radiohead, we did the Radiohead bonus episode that introduced a lot of people to Radiohead, which is just like a wonderful thing for us personally, but also like for Radiohead fans. Like there's some like aspects of the lore and the story that people often like didn't know, and it's just fun to like get a kind of slideshow.
We made a podcast saying he's like, I'm getting emotional and stuff. Bam of Power Report, and we made a podcast, I should say.
That's right. And so it's great to listen to for old Radiohead, people who have been listening to Radiohead for a long time, and people who are new to Radiohead as well, who will soon to be Radiohead fans. So check that out at youtube.com/audiofacepod or wherever you listen to podcasts. So all Radiohead all the time, actually not really, but when that album comes out, looks like they've lawyered their way into getting Radiohead onto an Audio Face episode, just like Gorillaz does sometimes. But we're not going to be doing, like, Gorillaz are doing a 20th anniversary thing, but I don't think we're getting many new tracks on that. So
no, not like different. A whole new album, which this is what it sounds like. So
yeah. We also, just since I'm here plugging things, we do bonus episodes all the time, not only just on Radiohead, but on different artists like MF Doom. That was an emotional one as well. Daft Punk, Caro Benito, new artists as well. And we even do ones that are like more conversations. We haven't done one of those lately, but we'll definitely do more of those in the future. Like we did the State of Music 2021. The past couple of years, we didn't do Song of the Summer because it just didn't really feel right.
there's the same thing like this year too. Like it's closer, but...
Yeah, it felt more summery. I thought about it a little bit more, but like, it's not the same. And like, even speaking of it feeling more summery in an America is an attention privilege. But anyways, we do bonus episodes. You can check those out at youtube.com/audiofacepod or anywhere you can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, etc. There's many of them. Go out there. Follow us at audiofacepod at audiofacepod on Twitter or on Instagram. And like we also said, at youtube.com/audiofacepod. We have a playlist that's available in the YouTube, in the description of all of our YouTube videos that have been released this year, and in the description of all of our podcasts that have been released this year, to our 2021 AF playlist of basically all of our favorite songs that have been released this year. So check those out as well. And as Sean alluded to earlier, we have friends on the show Power Report. We do political things from time to time. Actually, that's essentially all we do. And you can see Bam on that. You can see Caesar, who is also on We Made It podcast, on that. You see Sean on that from time to time. I'm on there way too much. And you know, you can get all of that stuff at the possibly inappropriate name, named youtube.com/Dan from the internet. youtube.com/Dan from the internet for all the Power Report stuff. And thank you, Peter, for making Power Report and Audio Face sound better than ever and continually better all the time. That is thanks to his work at Dead Music Productions. That's deadmusic666 on Insta. And with that, dear Lord Sean, what have you done to the rundown?
I'm undoing it as we speak.
Yeah, all good. Anyways, it's interesting because we're doing this episode shortly around the weekend of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and both of us were incredibly young to the point of we barely have memories of like exactly what our day was, in that it was barely different from any other day in like preschool, kindergarten, whatever that year was, right? Maybe the adults were acting a little bit weirder. my pet goat.
I mean, shut I up remember. I definitely remember it happening and everything, and like trying to comprehend it. But the only issue was just, yeah, we were quite young. Like I was in, if you're in kindergarten, I'm not sure your situation, but for me, I was in kindergarten, and I remember all of that, which is crazy. Yeah. And there's people who are making millions of dollars who were born after 9/11, and they had to be taught 9/11 in school, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, there are people who are born after me who are teaching 9/11 history, which is, that's fine. I'm not going to be like a curmudgeon about it, but also they weren't born that far after me, and a lot of the stuff they're getting is wrong. But again, this is not the podcast for that. I didn't even do a Power Report about that. I think I'll revisit that another time, because there are sources out there that are doing a really good job that are easily accessible. But the music related aspect to this is, and that's relating to history, is that in memorandum of September 11th, Clear Channel, which is currently known as iHeartMedia, so they're iHeartRadio, et cetera. They're a major radio distribution channel, essentially the only one, because that's the state of radio at this point. SiriusXM is satellite radio. It's a slightly different beast. But they released suggestions that they sent out to their 1,100 radio stations across the United States of what songs could have potentially, quote, lyrically questionable lyrics, meaning that the words could be triggering to, you know, folks in the wake of 9/11. And I want to note that this was not called cancel culture. This was not called invasion of free speech. This was a company that was kind of taking a directive from a Republican-led government and establishment to censor these things. And then to get into, Sean, what you're saying is, the list is kind of ridiculous.
So first off, the ones that made me die were REM's It's the End of the World as We Know It. I just started dying when I saw that.
Before the bodies are even cold.
Another one is Queen, Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah, no, that one made me laugh too. Bob Dylan's Knocking on Heaven's Door. Filters, Hey Man, Nice Shot. Learn to Fly by Foo Fighters.
You too, Sunday Bloody Sunday. We got this clip. Jesus.
Oh man. Speed Kills by Bush.
Why is that in Deutsche Luftballons in here? It's in German, assholes.
There's a whole list of AC/DC songs from Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap to Highway to Hell to TNT to Shot Down in Flames to Shoot to Thrill to Safe in New York City.
Oh my god, I can't.
Some of these
literally, no, but the best part of this whole list, if you go to Rage Against the Machine, it just says dash all songs. The entire discography of Rage Against the Machine. Everything.
Blanket. Everything.
It's like a Harry Potter where they get the sorting hat and it's like extreme Slytherin. Doesn't even touch Malfoy's head. It's just a Slytherin. It's like that.
John Lennon's Imagine was also banned because forbid that we actually, God or, you know, Allah forbid that we actually show solidarity with people around this time. I was actually going to do a thread about the Ground Zero Mosque, this whole like non-controversy from like 10 years ago about like a case study in how these non-controversies kind of spin up when it's A, politically convenient for a certain group of people, and B, politically convenient and viciously racist also tend to be hand in hand here. And so like that's a pattern I kind of want to point out in a more political context. I think we wanted to kind of point these out, you know, to have a little bit of levity here as we do on this irreverent podcast, but also kind of point out like that important thing that in society today there's a lot of talk about what you can and can't say anymore versus like some of these things are like, okay, maybe we don't play a Safe in New York right after 9/11. Like, bad call, right? Not a very good call.
Yeah, exactly. But like, there's some things where you could do that. But
Rage Against the Machine, that four albums, 50 songs were deemed unacceptable because, I mean, obviously because they're very critical of the United States and government and foreign interventions broadly. And that was a time when it's very well documented from the mayoral side in New York City all the way up to the vice presidency. People were very, very eager to go to war, even though there are other people in the administration who were thinking of other avenues to go through with this. And so as 9/11 like kind of kickstarts the war in Afghanistan that is like sort of closing, arguably taking a new chapter, arguably starting a new book, if you will. Maybe you could call that book The Hunger Games if you're talking about the environmental issues there. It's important to contextualize these things and also understand these things, like, in our context of music, right? Like, in our avenue of, like, this touched everything. This touched every aspect of society. Everything. And it's also, like, nakedly political and, like, what choices were made here.
If you look closely, when Cheney's drinking water, Bush isn't talking.
We move on to Baby Keem's debut, you know, like proper LP skis.
Proper LP, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the Melodic Blue. It is 16 songs, 53 minutes long. And we reviewed the single with alleged family member Kendrick Lamar, Family Ties, which we both thoroughly enjoyed. I've been listening to that song a bit. I like how it's like, you know, you get that three songs in one almost. And then I was interested to hear this in the context of an album. This album is interesting to me because there's some of this I really, really like, and there's some of this that I absolutely fucking hate. So I want to hear what Dan has to say because I'm very interested in this.
I liked a lot of it, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm very much like mid about, like, I didn't really like hate anything on here, especially I think I give a lot of credit. I think I give a lot more leeway to people's first albums, especially when there's a lot on those first albums that are good. I allow a lot more missteps. There's definitely nothing I absolutely hated, but there are certain like songs that I'm like blasting and bumping a lot more that I absolutely love. And then there are certain songs where just like there's a difference in the level of quality that I can definitely attest to you there on.
Yes, you can definitely tell difference in quality in certain tracks. And there's some stuff, even in the lyrics, the production, everything that's wrapped up into a couple songs, you could tell the difference between it's definitely the quality between them, because there'll be to me a pretty big drop off on certain tracks, and then other tracks it'll be the exact opposite.
I'll say this to start as we jump into the like how the album begins. I'll say that those inconsistent parts happen in phases because the album is actually like pretty well laid out. The songs flow in well together. You feel like you go through different things. And again, to kind of tip things off, Baby Keem's doing a little bit of a trap and B thing sometimes, a very light trap and B. Like there's some singing here over some like melodic trap tones.
Yeah.
But mostly what you're getting here is rapping. Like, trap beats that are pretty hard. Like this is LA we're dealing with here. So I mean, not to like over rep our city here, but I'll just say like in doing this podcast for so long, the West Coast and LA specifically like produced things in trap. Not always, but to me are more consistent. To me, they're production wise a lot more tight and consistent. Sometimes you get better experimentation from the South in like Houston and Atlanta, and definitely there's a lot that has to be said about the Midwest, but the production is always very tight with this. But you get mostly rap over trap music that's very production tight, but a little bit of trap and B here, which if I'm guessing, maybe that's where Sean kind of like falters with some of the parts of the album here.
Yeah, exactly. That's yep, spot on. You've been doing this podcast too long.
Yeah, well, I know you.
For me, that's where it feel like a little derailed here or there, where you get to some parts of the trap and B. It just felt misplaced is my biggest thing. Because he did do a lot of it where there's a lot of tracks that had like Family Ties, where you have, you know, a couple tracks in one. Like Trademark USA has that. I do like that. I do like how that track starts out, opens up the album, because it gives you a good idea of how it's going to be. But then with Range Brothers with featuring Kendrick, like it felt a little bit long with how that track went. And then you have some others throughout the album where they, again, they're split up, and sometimes they're split up and it works very well. And other times they feel way too inconsistent within one track, and it can feel like it throws it off here or there. That's my big complaint.
Yeah. I like, there's some songs that are like really kind of more instrumental focused, but they're really cool. And you get like almost, similarly to how in Sometimes I Might Be Introvert, the Little Sims project from last week that we reviewed, you get like the really most introspective parts of Baby Keem in these really short interlude songs like Scapegoats, for example.
I bet he drop. I don't hate the trendy things. Just don't like to feed the trends. Mama gave me all my sins. Learn me when the story ends. Flowers on my uncle's tomb. Thousands to my aunties too. I'm used to taking back streets. Last week was nothing new. Bitches is my scapegoat. Who I made this tape for? I tell the story 2 years later. For now the case closed.
I've heard so much about it. You talk about it all the time.
And, I love how it kind of ends with this nice sort of like simple piano thing that's very like quiet, muted, melodic kind of thing. Well, like right after he's going into this thing that's very introspective about himself and how he goes about, you know, how he looks at life, how he deals with his family, all these different kind of things. And it leads really nicely into Range Brothers, which, yeah, I think is a really well bloated song, Top of the Morning. But I also think that it has a lot of good in there when you get past that. Like it's got banger qualities. It does the kind of like pomp and circumstance that you really appreciate in a trap song, much like Kendrick Lamar, actually not much like, but akin to Kendrick Lamar's collaboration with J-Rock doing Win. Not quite as I mean barely a collaboration. It was more like he was doing ad libs in the background. But similar Mommy. Kind of it literally was that. And It's going for that same kind of tone, right? Definitely doesn't achieve the same kind of thing. But you can definitely get like a, this is Kendrick Lamar and Baby Keem flexing together and having a good time. Range Brothers referring to like having Range Rovers together. And I think they're actually like doing like Rover Brothers and the things there. So that's a fun vibe there. But even that, like getting into the idea of the entire album doing a good like sequencing together, that perhaps bloated song segues nicely into Issues, Gorgeous, South Africa, Lost Souls, which is a good collection of songs together, like they're in the right place. But that might be the part where like, okay, it starts to drone on with Baby Keem's like auto-tuney, croony kind of deal he's trying to do that hasn't really gotten quite like, you know, he hasn't worked out yet.
Yeah, I've never really liked it in general. Like that could be an issue. That's an issue with me with Ray Stremmerd and a couple other artists and stuff. When they have that whiny, high-pitched auto-tuned voice, if they keep doing that like consistently throughout tracks, then it to me it really it gets to me a bit too much. Even like with the track, or with Issues, it's a little bit better of a track right after Range Brothers. Even though to me it feels out of place on this record, at least with There you get a really good voice and it changes it up for that part.
You don't know what we've been through. Don't let the wolves come get you. Please don't let them come get you. How could I resent you? Demons and tissue. Grandma and I missed you. You don't know what we've been through. Don't let the wolves come get you.
And then after like that collection, you have going down towards the middle, you have Coco with Don featuring Don Toliver. You don't have that many features, by the way. You only have Kendrick, Don Toliver, and Travis Scott.
Kendrick twice, though.
Yes, Kendrick twice. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I actually like this song, Coco, with Don Toliver. I thought it was decent, at least production-wise.
Yeah. The track, Do-Rag Activity, I do enjoy. It's a very simple track. Almost like, I want to say Kenny Beats, like, in its production, where it's sort of light and electronic and melodic kind of in the background, where it's mostly in the 808s, essentially, that song. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just the bass of it. And you just have this, like, light sort of synthesizer mood thing in the background. She thought, I go it, it's okay. She keep powder on her nose, it's not no makeup. Bandana silky on her braces, I didn't lay up. She need a light, she need a taste. Do rag activity, do rag activity, do rag activity, do rag activity. Big stench, yes, big stench. But no, it goes hard. Travis Scott pairs it back a little. Yeah, no. Travis Scott pairs back the It's Lit and all that stuff. He just does the kind of whoa thing kind of in the background, which that's kind of like it goes back to tribal chants with Africa and like slave chants to like stuff you did in hip hop. Like, it sounds pretty good. Like, I like the way Travis Scott layers that.
It's the first Travis Scott feature I've heard or track this year that is actually good. Everything else I've heard, like, we've been ragging on him all year. We're just like, this is, you're rehashing the same thing over and over again. And it was cool maybe 3-4 years ago, but now it's overdone. And now, like, on the record to be, at least he did something a little bit different. And I ended up really liking that track.
Yeah. What did you think of the song after that, Boom Man?
Boom Man.
Yeah.
I always read it wrong. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, that
like,
feel like...
I really like the trump, like, towards the end of it. Granted, this is a short song, or a throughout track. I like the trumpets part in it. It's interesting how the production is, but it could feel a little cheap to me at times.
Yeah, I felt like that was one of the songs where it... that was one of the songs where you felt the most, like, production-wise, they didn't, like, stretch it out enough. There are some songs where, like, went all in, like, what kind of flares can we do throughout the song to make mm-hmm. this interesting, to continue to, like, give it some style here, whether it's Travis Scott's
like,
things.
The last two tracks, you get that on, but Boom Man is, like, just a throwaway track to me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I felt as well. There's also South Africa as well, kind of earlier in there.
Yeah.
In that collection of songs where he's kind of just like singing sort of and also trying to rap in it. It's just not great. I don't like the balance of it. I think maybe it's something he practices and owns into a little bit more, because like rappers doing like singing parts, which are now like kind of like a thing that I think this generation is trying to do a lot more of, to kind of balance both. Some of these rappers just can't sing, honestly, like at all. And so...
Which is fine. Like, you don't have to do it at all.
Yeah, you either, like, kind of have to, like, lean into it, or, like, one of the legends, MF Doom, did. And it was, like, all, like, gravelly and raspy and just wild all the time. And he kind of played off as, like, hey, I'm a drunk-ass villain character, and I'm, like, kind of wild. Or you kind of go into it like Vince Staples, where, like, he can, not hitting all the notes perfectly, but, like, pairs himself with other, like, singers who can do that role really nicely. And then, like, he can kind of meet up to their level almost, or at least enough to where it matches. Maybe
not everybody's going to be Drake.
Yeah, maybe Baby Keem can get to that point at some point, but I'm not to the Drake level, because Drake does have some like vocal talent. Some
he definitely does.
But yeah, I just wish you had a little bit fewer of those songs, like South Africa or Boom Man, and a little bit more of the songs where you're getting the best distillation of all of that. But that being said, like, of rap projects this year, this is one of my favorites, actually. Like, yeah. Not but beyond Decent, like one of my favorites for like the songs where it's doing things.
My favorites are definitely, I like Tyler's record, I like Vince Staples' project and a couple others, but I think this one's all right.
This is on the this isn't on the top end of those favorites. Like, it's not beating any of those. But like, if I were making like, what are your top five, maybe top seven rap albums of this year? It'd be like fifth or seventh. It'd definitely cap it out for sure. This is one of the better ones. And for like a first LP effort, like even better. Because the rest have been mixtapes and they've been like, you know, you're kind of getting on there, but the LP is like when you're really making the big deal. And like, it's didn't feel too long other than like the bits where it felt too long. I felt like it was a good project. So Arbitrary Scale this week is U.S. Steel Companies. Why? No reason. I don't know.
Because we do it every week is Arbitrary Scale, because ratings don't matter, and because Peppa Pig beat Donda, so it really doesn't give, we really don't care. So we just make it up as we go.
Yeah.
Why not?
I'm gonna give this just based on estimated sales and overall, well, you know, this is a newcomer with some good sales. We're gonna give this a Saber Steel. It was founded relatively recently, but it has like the sales figures of like some of the older giants, like Eastern Steel, A1 Alloys, etc. They're definitely making. I don't know if they're great at their job, but they're probably getting some really, you know, high level clients, maybe some taller buildings, let's say. And so they're making their money that way.
Yeah, this is Advantage Metal Services Incorporated. You know, shout out South Almani. Just because maybe they got some contracts on some like interesting shaped buildings and some other things. So, they got some decent estimated sales as well, just depending if it's up year, down year. I mean, shipping costs are up, so maybe they're getting a little more coin in their bag. You never know.
Yeah. LA born and raised. So you got to like shout out that perfectly good steal. Yeah. Great steal even.
Music business worldwide.
Slim pickings. So Apple Music, a lot was talked about, and maybe we even talked about this. In fact, I actually do remember vaguely looking at the goddamn orange Music Business Worldwide website in 2018. It's been a minute, but I remember looking in 2018 when Apple had purchased or acquired Shazam in some kind of way, and they were like, watch this. This is going to get interesting. And we've also talked about the kind of ongoing struggle with how it's hard to get balance the fact that DJs use a lot of different artists in their mixes, and they like remix it. And, you know, that makes
45 different artists in one mix.
Yeah. But on the downside, it gets very hard to credit those artists. So you either go with the approach of just blocking that kind of art altogether, which sucks, or making it hard to actually compensate those artists, which also sucks. So Apple Music is now using the technology from the Shazam acquisition to identify tracks in the DJ mixes, not to take those tracks down, it seems, but to make sure that the rights holders get compensated for like the proportionate amount of streams that's getting on Apple Music. So yeah, I'm kind of seeing it. It says like, yeah, thousands of mixes are available on Apple Music on a dedicated DJ mix page. And DJ mixes have been streamed 300 million times to date on Apple Music. And over 3 million of the platform subscribers are engaging with DJ mixes every month. And according to Music Business Worldwide, Slim Pickens, they've also noted, according to like their numbers, because they're industry analyst people, that the people who have been engaging in DJ mixes have tripled over the past 12 months. So you can kind of infer that if it started basically the year around 1 million, and now we're around 3 million. So that's pretty good. Hopefully it continues to ride this line of being able to allow these mixes to exist and allow them from newer artists as well. Because some of these DJs, like some of them are more prominent. Some of them are like, you know, DJs that have been around for a decade or so. So like, yeah, of course, Apple can test pilot things in a safe manner on this. But I want to be able to see this. So hopefully regular artists can DJ the things sample the things they want to and remix the things they want to. And the artists who contributed to those things can get compensated down the chain as well.
Yes, I agree. So it's something that's actually going right for once.
Yeah.
You, Daniel.
Moving on, we have Star-Crossed by Kacey Musgraves. It is 15 songs, 47 minutes long, and it's a really interesting project. So Kacey Musgraves, you kind of think of as a country music artist, and so I wonder, like, the idea on Sean's face, and like, this is on the rundown, it's like, okay, what's going on? But this is also an interesting project for Kacey Musgraves. It's fairly not autobiographical, let's say, but it's referencing her divorce, her breakup with another country music artist whose name I can't recall currently. But because of that, you're getting, like, you know, the typical emotions of like breakup and fallout and things like that. But you're also kind of getting some genre exploration here. I think she was saying that she had the inspiration for Star-Crossed was all over the place. I think she cited Daft Punk among others as like one of the reasons she wanted to make this artist. Like, let's art. She said Sade, Eagles, Daft Punk, Bill Withers, Weezer. She kind of took influences first from off, Romeo and Juliet. Which one of these is not like the other?
Exactly. Hold on. You say Daft Punk, Eagles, a bunch of others, and then you put Weezer. Sade. Oh yeah, that's why you got Sade. God damn, you put Sade in there. And Weezer, Weezer does not deserve the same Weezer? Fucking conversation as those musical giants. But nonetheless,
you're taking influences from those giants. So maybe Kacey Musgraves is pulling from good Weezer. That exists in the olden days. But you get something that has, you know, some synthesizers in it, some like layered harmonies that you get in like newer pop music. But you also get some, I guess it's like, I don't even want to say country undertones, but you can't get rid of the fact that Kacey Musgraves is a country artist, and that's like kind of her voice and where she's coming from it. But that being said, even if you aren't that much of a country music fan, I think there's a lot to enjoy from this record.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent pop record. There is a lot of different sounds in there. It starts off pretty with the first track, Star-Crossed, is pretty quiet and understated, and it's like it kind of builds and builds, and then you get this little electronic undertone for the last minute. I gave you back your name. What have we done? That's not what I expected it at all when I heard this when I saw this album. I looked at it, I was like, okay, put it up, and I was like, whoa, that's definitely not what I expected. So you can hear immediately from that opening track like a bit of her influences and stuff on it, and throughout the record you get a lot of different tracks like Goodwife again right after it. You get more of like a pop song, but it still has a lot of experimentation for her and production wise and everything. But overall I was pleasantly surprised by it. There's still some stuff where I could feel like some of the slower tracks, they take a long time to develop. Once they develop, they're pretty good. So I think that might be my main complaint is that sometimes I want it to get a little bit quicker per se. But I mean, none of the tracks are super long or whatnot, but it could feel long with how long it takes to set up a certain track, and then you get to kind of the bulk of it towards the last like minute or so, and I'd rather be a little bit quicker to explore on some more themes that I would like a little bit more. But that's just a personal preference. We have songs like Cherry Blossom, which is a pretty decent pop track too, so it's I think it's a good effort.
I like Simple Times right after Cherry Blossom. It's like a really kind of like powerfully melancholic track. For the simple times, wish that I could put this game on pause. Skip this round, take the headset off. Put my lip gloss on. Kick it at the mall like there's nothing wrong. I need to step away. And if I don't, I'm gonna go insane. Cause being grown up kinda sucks, and I'm really just missing the simple times. And it's one I'd actually kind of use as a counterpoint to that. it sort of sounds like slowed down Beck, which I understand because you're doing a lot of, like, slowed down information Beck, which I really like. You're doing a lot of experimentation in it, but of course it's going to be a little bit sadder and drier because it's sort of like the person, Kacey Musgraves, talking about literally simple times, trying to think of things to do to distract from this, like, breakup.
And I like that track a lot, too.
Yeah, I think it kind of... I was gonna say it starts with like a muted bass thing that I wish they could have continued as a motif through like the rest of the album, but I think it's fine.
Yeah, I think my theme is there's a lot of different sound, a lot of different stuff within the record, and there's some sounds production wise and even lyrically that I would like to be explored a little bit more. But that's just something that you're always going to be left wanting when you have an album that you have a lot of influences from.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be difficult to kind of like focus in on the influences you want to use. And I think that's where a lot of artists can accidentally falter when they're doing these things. That being said, I think this is a decent mix. Like, I think this is a pretty good mix. I think more often than not, this is landing the right balance, even if it's a little bit understated than like the wrong balance where it's like, this is a bastardization. You are like, this isn't the situation where it's a bastardization of all of these artists and their like all these influences and what it sounds like. I think this is a good. I think it's really just that, like, these are light influences. Like, maybe you thought of some of these things, but it's not like these aren't ripoffs or carbon copies. These are like very much like Kacey Musgraves doing like her own style of thing. You kind of go into the rest of the album, and yeah, I guess I can kind of get that overall thing where you kind of wait for the album to build up to something or have a particular change in flow or pace, but sort of just like different states of being that are kind of slow and different levels of, okay, a little bit more of the alternative, a little bit less the synth, all that kind of like playing around thing. And so there could be more of a progression there. There could be a little bit more like journey or organization there. Maybe even some, I don't know if you would agree with this, more or less like experimentation with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because I appreciate the record in general for what it is because of how, like, I guess the state of country music, because country music right now is going through its own little period where you have a lot of controversies in it, but they also have a lot of different sounds that are like, there isn't one specific sound that is necessarily taking over, but you have a lot of other things that are kind of battling each other to take over. And then you have an interesting record with Kacey Musgraves to have it where you have more of those pop influences and others tracks. So I'm always on the thing where I like more experimentation, but then there's also the part where you would like it to be cohesive in a way. So you try to not have too many experimentations, but have enough to where it sounds fresh. It's that fine line. It's trying to find the perfect balance and everything of a record, which is quite difficult to do.
Yeah. And I'll give her that. It's a difficult balance. It mostly rides that, but yeah, sometimes it feels like there could be more, and then sometimes it feels like there could be less. So it's definitely really interesting. But I overall like,
and also in a genre that is, you know, super male dominated, like within country music, it's nice to hear a female go in and do something different and not really care what anyone else would think.
That's definitely true. A lot of people would say maybe this is a sharp turn from her earlier music, but she's doing that boldly, and we appreciate that here on Audio Face. And I'll also add, I guess because I have to, because we're talking about the state of country music kind of slightly, and we don't do that much on Audio Face. People are shocked when I tell them that stat from about a month ago, or maybe a month and a half ago, where like for the first half of the year, the top three artists were Drake, Taylor Swift, and Morgan Wallen as far as streams go.
And yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, we're not surprised based on our understanding of American society and our understanding of like music, because we've been following these things closely. But people are surprised given their understanding of Morgan Wallen and the things he's said and what he's like doing kind of right now, right? So
my thing with country music is not even just about him, but you have other artists, Dustin Lynch and a couple others, that their records that are coming out are absolutely shitty. Like, they turn to like bro country, or they turn into this really terrible pop country that isn't very thoughtful, well laid out. The production is horrible, and it's just, it feels very, very cheap. And the nice thing within Star Crossed is you get, you know, you can get pop country, you can get more of your country artist that wants to turn pop, turn more, do some more pop motifs, but she does it very well with this record. It doesn't sound cheap, it doesn't sound rush or anything that is production wise that isn't necessarily rushed. So it's good in that regard.
Yeah, I'd rather have like a good album than a bad mediocre album. That this is well thought out. So overall is the thing. Arbitrary scale, because we always do arbitrary scales in Audio Face, because actual rating systems on music shows don't matter. So we just lean into it. U.S. steel manufacturers. Why U.S. steel manufacturers this week? I don't know. So this week, I'm going to give this Eagle National Steel.
Damn it, I was going to do the same thing.
Well, that just means we're in alignment. They actually have the highest amount of sales on here.
50 to 99 to about 100 million estimated sales. So, you know.
Yeah, that's money. Texas Power. And at least you got to get Texas Power from somewhere. So, anyways, kind of a sadder, weirder story. I don't know why these kinds of things happen, but Pop Smoke's gravesite in Brooklyn got vandalized, according to TMZ itself. The crypt at Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, New York, was smashed open sometime between Friday evening and Saturday morning. Drag masks were also seen on the ground outside the crypt, suggesting the vandals attempted to remove the rapper's grave, and it was not immediately clear if they were successful.
Jesus, man.
Like, that's some wild, like, grave robbery to do. And, like, listen, Pop Smoke cleared to be, like, really about the streets, it seems. He had, like... I mean, like, he was ultimately killed by a teenager, like, gang member. Mm-hmm. It was really well reported by the LA Times. We kind of talked about that in a previous episode of Audio Phase this year. It just seems, like, kind of really senseless. I don't know if it's some sort of, like... In relating to that kind of thing, like, I don't know if it's some sort of like retribution or revenge kind of deal, but it just seems like even sort of like weird in that context even. So I don't know, it just seems like some stupid kid shit, I would hope. Seriously. But like, it's pretty rough.
That's wild. And you know, you're still robbing graves now.
Yeah, that's this is a morbid podcast, but even for us, that's kind of like, hey, no more. Yeah. Moving on, we have Glow On by Turnstile. 15 songs. Is, am I reading this? No. Yeah, that is 15 songs, 34 minutes long. So I need to work on my monitor placement sometimes. And Turnstile are known for, like, you know, somewhat harder rock style of things. But this was, I guess, this the trend this week, where artists who are in traditional genres kind of try to branch themselves out a little bit and do things a little bit differently than they normally would. So, I mean, Mystery Begins, where you feel like pretty well at home, where you get like your loud guitars, your drums, like you get like a lot of sound in there. But even that song, you sort of get a hint of, okay, things are going to be kind of different here. And then you get very early through it, and I'm not going to jump the gun here. I'll let Shauna kind of go in here. But like very early through it, you can tell that there's a lot more genre blending going on here. Maybe not even experimentation, but definitely genre blending.
Yeah, it's not very experimental in that regard, but there is definitely genre blurring and bending, where you have indie motifs in here, you have alt rock motifs, you have early alt rock motifs that sound like Blackout, sounds like, you know, Foo Fighters before they sucked ass, and you have a couple different sounds throughout the record, but I ended up enjoying it nonetheless. Big thing that I like with it is that, even though there are 15 tracks, they're all really short and sweet and to the point of every track, which in a modern rock album, you have to do, unless you're like basically a legend of rock or anything. But a lot of the rock albums we've gotten, some of them have been long, like example, Smashing Pumpkins record that was like 2 hours long, and it just winds out and you can't find any good. Or it takes a long time for you to find any good substance in it, because the rest of the album just feels like filler. This record doesn't really have any filler in it. Everything is pretty cohesive throughout the record. And you get some, like, example, Don't Play, you get some punk motifs in there. You can get like some harder rock motifs throughout too. So you have a lot of different genres that they're trying to throw and bend into and morph it into this, all into this one record. And I like it.
Yeah, Don't Play is like a really good, I think, like blending there, because the songs before that are pretty like in the harder, faster rock kind of thing. But Don't Play, you sort of got to get some, it's a thing I like doing when I'm like editing music and drums, especially where I like kind of flip the drums a little bit and kind of have them do like a fade effect kind of where they're almost reversed. And you kind of get that in the latter part where it's like an alternative kind of flip of the song of Don't Play, which is really fun.
Yeah.
After that, you have Underwater Boy, which is kind of what I was alluding to. It's like almost like a surf rock track half the time. It's very interesting in its own way, but yeah, it's very interesting in its own way. Definitely it would be polarizing if you are into the band or not, but I think it's like one of those things where you have a, you know, like the same punk sensibilities where like you have a sort of approach to a song and how you portray yourself about caring about that song and the way it's sort of like perceived and going like that, versus like how it actually comes out in the different instrumentation. Like we said, it sounds very surf rocky, but still like really interesting.
Yeah, like it, like that track too is pretty cool because you will like have like the surf rock ish theme and then it like cuts to like a couple seconds of hard rock and then it goes straight back to it. So it's like it was like a schizophrenic in a way, but it's purposely for that until like towards the end where it really mills out and you have that throughout it. I really like that track.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking of like, because there's only one main feature on here who's Blood Orange, who appears on Alien Love Call and Love Desire. Lonely Desires. The Lonely Desires track at the end is a lot more like a traditional like turnstile track where it's a lot like heavier. But Alien Love Call's a little bit in that kind of slower vein, almost grungy in a way. So you just get like a whole range of different things here and it's pretty like,
cool.
Yeah, it's definitely really cool.
Yeah. I like Alien Love Call a lot. It's different where it's like, it's almost like a psychedelic ish track with how it, the guitar in the background goes out. It's really echoed. You can hear it throughout. Like the effects on it are really cool. The duet that goes on and throughout the whole track too. It's a really fun track to have it in that middle of that record to break it up a little bit.
Yeah. Overall, like it's pretty good. Like overall, like yep. TLC, like if you're still looking for that like hard punk shit, like there you go. You'll get that with that 13th track right there.
You also get Wild World and a couple others too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's got a little bit of something for everyone, but like it'll help kind of like get people's feet wet if they're not into like the harder stuff, because you'll see a bunch of things from like, you know, other flavors of rock music kind of around here. And yes. We haven't, in our Rock is Dead conversation, we didn't include hard rock as much as we did with indie as far as like what would help resurrect rock or kind of like keep it living. But I think something has to be said for some of the rock outfits that we reviewed here and there on Audio Face throughout the months and years that do try to push that boundary a little bit, because they also kind of get a shout out there too.
Yeah, because like my favorite rock record to date that we've reviewed on this podcast is Preoccupations. Their trying to think of the name of their record that we read in 2018, new material in 2018, is my favorite by far. And that you get some sense of harder rock and stuff in there, but then you also have a lot of indie influences and alt rock influences, a bunch of other things in that record too. But there's a lot, and I can't wait to get to that conversation again when we can early next year and everything, because there's a lot this year that is a bit different than what I had envisioned, but there's some stuff too that we both said was going to happen as well. So it's going to be a good conversation, and it's a good album.
Certainly. Arbitrary Scale this week, steel companies, steel manufacturers, in the United States, United States based. And what are you going to give this one?
I was going to give this Bear Tech Alloys Incorporated from Placentia, because shut up Placentia. You know, just a solid 4.9 mil in sales. So it's a small operation. But you know, it's a smaller operation, you get a bigger cut because maybe you only got like 10 employees or some shit instead of like a couple hundred. So Boston gets more.
Yeah, you're keeping a nice sort of, you know, everyone can more or less make a living there. Maybe you could up the
maybe
sales.
Maybe it's co-op.
A
you never
bit,
know.
But yeah.
What a dream.
Not likely, but this is steel, not like vegan hamburgers. I was actually going to either give it that or Continental Steel and Tube Company from Fort Lauderdale. You know, just something that feels really blue collar, something like that.
I feel it. Okay.
Quick hits. We have two heartwarming stories for different reasons. One is that Lana Del Rey, noting her personal needs for privacy and transparency, has announced that she is deleting her social media accounts.
And she's going to be releasing an album in like a month or two, so it could also be a ploy for you to listen to her records more. We'll see. But she cites like she needs more privacy and transparency and all this other shit. But
simply because I have so many other interests and other jobs that I'm doing that require privacy and transparency. Right. That makes sense. Sure. Okay.
Sure. That's what we'll say to that. Let me know when you get back and you promote your album, all this shit too. Cause she also just released a single last week, but I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. We'll talk about Lana Del Rey only when we absolutely have to, when the album drops. But I will say this, Lana Del Rey talking has not gone well for her in many different iterations and forms. And
in
so
many years as well. She shoots herself in the foot over and over again.
Yeah, and so maybe it would make sense for her to just like, with this album rollout, do the anti-Kanye and just like take a step back, just peace a little bit.
Which is fine.
And like we said, heartwarming. But Avicii's life and music are remembered with this really cute little Google doodle, which was kind of confusing for me because I was Googling something and I was working really fast and randomly an Avicii Google search popped up. I'm like, I didn't do this. But yeah, they had an illustration of Tim Bergling, who obviously went by Avicii on stage, went through, like, I had an animation of him, and then like if you clicked through it, it would sort of show different touch points of his life, from it's like an animated tour of his life that is soundtracked by Wake Me Up, which features vocals from Aloe Black, which he also produced a smash hit, and it's another smash hit he produced, like Levels. And yeah, we talked about that episode. That was one of the first posthumous albums that we reviewed, or like one of the first ones I remember.
Yeah.
And definitely had some weird, interesting thoughts about it, because every kind of artist came onto that album kind of wanting to do sort of their own
thing.
Tribute, I guess. And yeah, it was definitely their own thing. I think I even remember an Imagine Dragons thing on that, which we've done an excellent job of ducking doing the Imagine Dragons review.
I just don't want to do it, man. I don't got that energy.
Yeah,
because it's already going to be, I don't even need to review it, or I might put in my court packing and talk 4 seconds on it and just automatically nominate for worst music on flat earth. I'm not going to spoil it for everybody.
That's a smart man. Save that for court packing. Actually, technically, since you just slightly mentioned it on Audio Face right now, you don't even need to do it for court packing. We passed that rule, so save that time. There we go.
Good man.
So this has been Audioface. Thank you very much for listening. Truly, I try to incorporate thanks to the audience in every single episode. I don't know if I've been doing that every episode. If so, then I'm just going to sound like I'm just anal about this. But thank you to the audience for listening and helping to grow the show. You really have been listening to all the plugs I've been doing after the show. So maybe, you know what? I'll just won't do any plugs. We did them earlier in the episode, so I'll just do very few of them, except the personal ones. Sean can be found on Twitter if he can let you find you. And Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. And I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Also, check out youtube.com/Dan from the Internet for all of the Power Report related things I'm doing, all the Political Report related things that we're doing. And, The Power Report related things that we are all doing. And, political videos and things like that. I'm like in the middle of writing two of them right now because that's how production logistics work. And they're very fun. So check those out. Check us out. But honestly, just thank y'all for being y'all. And we continue to march on with some incredible music coming out in the next coming weeks. So we'll continue to bring that to y'all. Thank you for listening. See y'all next week. Cheers.
Bye.